I'm Jorgen Sundberg, and you're listening to SM Knowhow, the Link Humans podcast. And today, we're going to talk about inbound marketing. Okay, so I'm here with David Smoke today, who is a partner in ArtMap Incorporated, a provider of inbound marketing on demand. He's also the head of marketing at Teamable, the enterprise employee referral engine, and advisor to Zoomforth, the rich media recruitment marketing solutions. And of course, he was previously director for content marketing and social media at Smart Recruiters, which is where I got to know him. And today we're going to talk all about inbound marketing. And welcome to the podcast, David.
Hey, Jorgen. Happy to be here. I like what you're doing with LinkedIn, our Linked Humans and Undercover Recruiter, and excited to be here.
Pleasure. Great. So let's start off with the basics. What is inbound marketing and why is it so important?
Well, inbound marketing, it's a great way to get people to your own message. At the simplest level, it's driving traffic to your values. And I really look at it with the rise of the internet as the best way to market, because as you put out, you know, your message, your ideas, your content, your status updates, you end up attracting people that align with how you already see the world. So, you know, instead of paying for, direct mail and ads and trying to convince people it's who you are, you just keep telling people who and what you are and who you help and have content that supports that, and you end up forming an audience of really potential buyers. And it's exciting for me in the marketing space because really right now what's valued more so than, you know, the size of your wallet is the quality of your message, because we have so many channels and mediums available to us online that we didn't have, you know, 5 years ago, 10 years ago, and even, you know, the last year or two, you still have new platforms emerging. You know, Medium, LinkedIn Publisher, you know, there's always a new blog coming along. There's always a new place to write. And it's been exciting for my career to, you know, I just write something and I'm able to talk to people like you and read, you know, things you're writing and comment on your articles. So it's an exciting time to be in inbound marketing.
Yeah. And I like that definition that inbound marketing is traffic to your values. Another question, I guess, is how is inbound marketing different to traditional content marketing?
I mean, this is it's a little bit of a tough one because they definitely, you know, overlap a lot. You know, you without content, you can't really have inbound marketing. You know, and these two terms, they really go hand in hand. You know, inbound is more like the flow of traffic, and content is more like what actually drives the flow of traffic. Like it has to go somewhere to something. And I'm not a huge fan of the term content marketing. Mainly, you know, whenever you start talking about what you do, it's always good to talk to people that are, you know, far outside your field, and, you know, so you can just kind of see how much you're, like, you know, buying into your own BS. And when I told my dad I was doing some content marketing, he was like, isn't all marketing content marketing? And it was kind of a funny, like, little bit of a step back moment for me, because it's like every piece of marketing has to have content in it. So I know that's not, the industry definition, but, to understand how broad these terms can go, it was a good moment for me. I think inbound marketing is, a better way to put it, 'cause it hits you more on the purpose of it. And that's to drive inbound traffic to your ideas and your values, as opposed to producing content for the sake of producing content.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting observation by your father, which I probably agree with as well. Right. Do you have a step-by-step approach for, let's say, a company wants to get started with inbound marketing? Where do they start? What do they do?
Well, I haven't written the book yet. So I guess the answer is not a clean yes. But with that said, I mean, there are clear places to start. You know, the HubSpot wrote the book on inbound marketing. That's a great place to start. Some of it's a little dated. I mean, they still have like a whole chapter on Dig. So, you know, you don't have to read the whole thing. You want to, some of it's a little dated. Like I said, it's about 7 years old. And there's some like kind of systems I have in place. A lot of it starts with looking at who you are. And then, you know, what words do you want to be your words, how to be a news source for that solution, you know, how to reduce barriers to produce content, how to find your advocates, and then kind of looking at, you know, how does that fit into your overall message and judging how successful you are in driving that type of traffic and conversions. I will say one thing I didn't really know too much about the founding of HubSpot until recently, and I had a good talk with one of their early employees, and it was cool to hear that they actually started as 20 little JavaScript apps, a great blog, and a long email list that blog created, and you know, from this they were able to kind of get to the next stage as a company, and then they acquired another company that became the group of its core product. So when you kind of look at these, what I take away from this story is that, you know, if you have these little effective tactics and you kind of get to the next step, your whole strategy will kind of form into place. You don't have to be as like as structured as saying like, you know, here's my 10-page strategy guide, and we're going to do this step this week and that step next week. It's kind of like if you can keep producing content and growing your audience and moving in the right direction, that strategy can form as it goes. Not that you want to entirely go that way because you want to, you know, look ahead and see where you want to be, but you also want to reduce barriers to keep taking each small step and building a great audience of target buyers.
Yeah, great. And yeah, I think that book you mentioned, I think they did an update to that at the end of last year, which we have in the office somewhere.
Oh, cool. I haven't read the update. That would be good. I bet they cut out Dig.
Yeah, they've got things like Vine in there and
oh, cool.
Other new platforms. Okay, so that's how to get started. What are some of the pitfalls? What mistakes should companies try and avoid?
I think the first one is making the threshold too high to share your words and your message. Because I run into a lot of companies and they're like, you know, they'll have one blog post a month and they have all these ideas of things they want to write and they'll start getting the ideas out there. But they don't feel like it's good enough. And like whenever you compare like, you know, product to marketing, there's like a Reid Hoffman quote that goes something along the lines, if you know your product is ready to ship, you waited too long. And there's a lot of value in this in the sense that like, you know, people that make really good things, they keep a high barrier to entry. Where they're like, I want it to be, you know, up to my 99% standard. And it's just like with content and growing an audience, like there's a human element to it. You know, it doesn't have to be, you want it to be good, but it doesn't have to be absolutely perfect. And yourself, a lot of times you'll be your own worst critic with your content and your messaging. So I really, and I see other startups, whenever I talk to them, they feel like they're in what they'll call stealth mode, but they'll be talking to people about what they're doing in person and then, you know, willing to say it in person, but not online where it could attract a, you know, a re-engageable audience. I just encourage brands to start sharing more sooner of their story. The next thing I would point to is just not knowing who you are and having it as like kind of a universal thing about your company. So like whenever you talk to, especially at an early stage company where there's only, you know, a couple people in the room, you should know who you are in three words. You should know who you are in one sentence, and then you should know who you are in a paragraph. And this boiling it, who you are down to those small forms It forces very tough discussions, but very important ones. And if you're confident and consistent with who you are, you'll end up attracting an audience that already demands what you're offering. But if you keep changing who you are, you know, it's harder to build an audience. You'll end up building an audience that doesn't fit with what you want to offer. And then I would say the last point is just not being open enough to collaborative marketing and guest blogging opportunities. You know, because I know you have a million things to do and you think, like, I just have to make my own blog better or my own site better and, you know, things will work out for themselves. But the internet is a very big place where traffic's driven. It comes from somewhere. You know, it's not like they go to a computer and then the first thing they do is log into your site. So I would say be very open to collaborative marketing with, you know, other people's email lists, other people's blog audience, and just try to do as much cross-pollination of audiences as you can.
Yeah, interesting you say that, because that's something we have certainly done with yourself, David, and the companies that you represent. And also, I'd add to the first thing you said about making the threshold too high to sharing your words. I think the beauty of especially written content online is that you can write it up to 90% and then publish, and then you can always go back and change it up over time if it's not really working, or if you want to change titles or anything.
It's a great way to get feedback on what you're doing. I mean, that last 10%, you know, a lot of that's not up to you. Like, you get 90% and you have to have 1,000 people read it to realize, you know, what that last 10% really is, just like testing a product.
Yep, for sure. In terms of technology, so you mentioned HubSpot. I know there are plenty of different platforms that automate inbound marketing. Is it something you need to be using? What are the platforms, tools, and apps that all the rage?
It does depend what stage you are on as a company. You know, because HubSpot's a great tool, but it's very expensive. I mean, if you're in that price range of ready to spend $2,500 a month on a solution, I think they're great. But at more simple levels, you know, it starts with your own site and social networks. I know these are kind of mundane for a good reason technologies, but you need to have, like, a good content management system in place. You need to be able to, you know, publish as quickly as possible. And whenever you have these barriers where the writer isn't able to submit drafts and the writer, so now the person, you have your CEO producing content and he's sending you an email with a draft. And then as you go to finalize it, you know, people aren't within the same system. Just a little thing like that can end up causing you to waste a lot of time. And with the social networks, you know, I guess we're not really getting on big tools here, but it is important with Twitter. I mean, Facebook, you can schedule posts within Facebook. With Twitter, you know, having a good solution to schedule content, you know, such as Buffer, Hootsuite, Sprout Social, those are all, you know, great. They're worth the small investment to have. I've also been doing some work with a company called Notify.io, and they've been doing really good things about uniting in-app activity and email. So they're a good solution there if you're trying to further engage your existing customers. But, you know, technology and what people choose to use, it's like I really, even when I've been working with new hires, it's like I don't really want to force you onto an existing system. It's a lot like I care about you having the right intent. You know, I care about you saying these are my buying personas, these are the 5 buying personas, and then this is how I'm going to go across each social network and start talking and engaging with those people. So first, I want to have that discussion and feel good about the direction you're headed. And then, you know, what tools do you actually use to get there? I'm a little less concerned with.
Okay, great. That gives hope to everyone who doesn't have a budget. How does inbound marketing work together with? Because you mentioned social. How does it work in conjunction with social or search or even paid media? Is that all inbound marketing? Or?
I mean, a lot of it is. If you start with, you know, paid, like PPC search, you know, how well you rank in Google is going to be contingent on the cost that you pay per click. So whenever you rank, you know, if you're third for job boards and then I put up an ad for job board, it's going to be twice as cheap as the person that ranks 30th, you know, roughly. So it's definitely a good, you know, it all does fit together. Especially, you know, you look at more paid ads, it's like, how do you end up retargeting people? You end up retargeting people because you're able to drive traffic to your site, and now you're trying to re-engage them and bring them back. So if you don't drive much traffic to your site, your retargeting cycle becomes a lot less efficient. If they've never been to your site and you're targeting them with ads, they're a lot less likely to click than if they've been them before and you're solving, you know, an intent they already have, and they just forgot about you and now want to revisit you. So it's, I'm hoping that more people with social media marketing backgrounds, content marketing backgrounds, and inbound marketing backgrounds start becoming CMOs of companies. And I think it's a very feasible thing to look across, because it's like, it is very integrated across the other aspects of marketing. If you start having your marketing leadership be more, you know, demand gen and marketing optimization people, I think you're at risk of losing the message and losing creativity. So I do think it's a great time to be in inbound marketing for moving up different marketing departments.
And you touched on a little bit, but how would you calculate return on investment from inbound marketing?
This is a little tougher because a lot of the value of inbound marketing is long-term residual traffic. So you do want to set a proper approach in terms of timeline and expectations with people. But, you know, at the simplest level to get you going, I've been trying to kind of grow this term of re-engageable audience. And the re-engageable audience is your social media followers and your email list. I think it's a very direct way of saying, this is my group of people that I can send a message to in the future. So that would be an important metric in addition to traffic and conversions. Traffic is pretty simple. You know, it's people on your website, how many you can go. Google's been pushing the visitor stat more, which I like. So it's how many, you know, unique people on your website. And then with conversions, you're looking across different types of conversions. It really depends on your business. But essentially, the threshold is when they're paying you or not paying you. So once you get to the point of, you know, traffic you drove actually starts paying money for your good or service. So I would start with those three, and then you can really break down a lot more stats from each one of those. Like with traffic, you know, someone visiting the pricing page is a much more important person across most businesses than someone reading a blog post about how to do something. Yep. But some blog posts about how to do something could be, you know, very high conversions for you. So you also, whenever you're looking at traffic, you want to look at what pages have the most likelihood that they'll turn into a conversion. If this page is, you know, 1% and this next page is 20%, if I can move them from that page that's 1% to 20%, you know, my odds have gone up a lot. So there's a lot of good ways to break it down. And along these lines, if you really want to get into inbound marketing, and something I've been pushing myself more, is just becoming a real expert in Google Analytics. We were talking about tools earlier, but in terms of like free tools out there, that there's a difference between, you know, a novice and an expert, and it's very high. Google Analytics is in that discussion, and it's really going to show you how your traffic's moving. If you're good at setting up events and traffic flows, you can really effectively report on your work and have a lot more learnings about what you want your site to do.
Yeah, it's almost a science in itself, Google Analytics, I think. Do you use Moz.com?
I have before. I'm actually not right now. I am a pretty big fan of their tool. It's a great tool. I'm not currently using it, but I would definitely recommend it.
Okay, great. If we look into the crystal ball, what trends do you see for the next, 3 to 5 years? And what should marketers be doing to be prepared for these trends?
I would start with becoming a better writer. I think the value of a well-written sentence, website, blog page, like that value is just going to continue to get higher. As there's more and more noise on the internet, the difference between, and in tech they talk about a lot, the difference of like a 10x engineer. I think it's the same principle with writing. If you have people that can express themselves well with the written word, you are going to be able to rise up above the noise. And so, a great writer is worth, 10 average writers. Those 10 average writers may be able to put out content at least 10x as fast, but if it doesn't rise to the top, your brand's getting hurt, you're not getting as quality of leads, and the content just kind of, sits in the middle with everybody else. And that's because the same thing, if barrier to entry is lower, there's a lot higher volume and there's a lot higher competition of content. The other direction I would encourage people to go, and I've been trying to push myself this way, is basically it's Photoshop, however you want to look at creating remarkable images. The image of every piece of content you share is like the second headline. So whenever you hit a point, if you write a great story, you pick a great headline, and then your image is that letter A that everyone has whenever they don't mark it as a feature image. I'm not sure if you've seen this, but if you're in WordPress essentially and you don't even select a feature image, it'll just put a letter there. And I've seen tons of great content get shared, and it's like people don't want to reshare it because then they see it in the newsfeed and it's like, this is not interesting. So your image, whether it's you or someone else, or raising your barrier to work with someone else, like where you're at the level of you're really getting good taste on your images and you're making unique images consistently, that simple thing will go a long way. So that's the last thing. Is this one's kind of going back to like gaining perspective. I would say to make sure to test your core marketing message on people who are in your industry and people who are not in your industry. So whenever you have this three words of who you are, this one sentence, this one paragraph, I would highly encourage you to do a lot more testing across diverse groups of people. The reactions you'll get from people that have, no idea that what an employee referral engine is, for example. When I was testing different teamable marketing messaging, it was great to do it on people who are now, like, say, 60-year-old and retired, say, 20 in college, kind of, because you can get too far into, like, what you are, and obviously everyone else knows it. So you want to make a real conscious effort to seek out people in different demographics and different perspective on life to test your message on.
So a sanity check with different demographics.
Sounds pardon?
Good. Like yeah. A sanity check, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, make sure it just makes sense sometimes.
Yeah, sanity check is a good way to put it. You can definitely get in too deep and think like you're explaining it perfectly, but remember that other people see the world differently.
Yeah, I mean, someone said that when you write an article, for it to be really good, it should be, is it a 6-year-old or an 8-year-old should be able to understand it. So
yeah.
If most people understand your messaging, then I think you've hit the spot.
Yeah, I think Sam Altman wrote one that was very similar to that I read. And, I mean, I used to work in a newspaper a while ago, and they were 7th, 8th grade level would be, like, borderline too high.
Right.
Yeah. Most newspapers, it's like keep those sentences short and direct. And I don't always believe in that, but there's definitely a lot to learn from it, and use it, you know, use the simple direct writing style. Because if you have a direct writing style, especially on the how-tos type of content, and, you know, when you're really just trying to explain an idea, you can definitely reach a wider audience if you don't write, you know, one-page sentences.
For sure. Great. So can you give us an example of companies or brands are doing inbound marketing the right way, and also tell us why?
Sure. one company I was thinking of... they're a really good example of how to integrate humor into their inbound marketing, and that's E24. And they have a product where it's very beneficial for them to integrate humor. You know, if you're depending on the seriousness of your product, you want to make a decision on your tone and your voice. But with E24, you know, their app is to order food online, you know, through your phone. So it's it's like, I'm hungry, you know, they have a level of, like, the more you just have this positive association with them, the more E24 is able to just make you smile, the more orders they'll happen through the app. And a few examples they've done, they did a great breakup letter with Facebook, where they were saying Facebook advertising isn't working for us, and they did all these really funny food comparisons of, like, you know, if you were to break up with your pizza, and, like, it was just a hilarious post that got picked up by all the mainstream publications, because what they did is they tapped into kind of a bigger issue, and that is, like, does Facebook advertising work? And they became they went on the forefront of saying it's not working for us, and essentially being a negative case study. It's a little bit of a risky move, because you're calling out a company bigger than you and saying you don't work very well. Which is kind of a funny thing to do, but it's just it's a very, very funny read. And they also did some other funny ones, kind of calling out headhunters, saying, like, you know, stop sending message to my people. So they're a really good one to look at. And each one of the posts, they kind of give an insight into, like, the personality of the company, which is always it has all these added benefits. You know, whenever you give the personality of a company, like, you know, you have the CEO saying, like, headhunters, stop going after my people. Or, you know, they have their marketing people talking about how they drove app downloads by advertising on adult sites, which is also a funny read of, like, I guess when people are visiting adult sites, they also want to order food. So they found kind of a funny overlap. But whenever you get this personality into your content and messaging, you also create this demand to work for your company, and people want to be around you. So that's, I would think they're really, in the consumer space, they're a great one to look at. They even have, on their app, they have really good micro copy, you know, the words within the actual product itself. After you make an order, it says something along the lines of, sit back and relax. Your thumb just made food happen.
Nice. So it's content with personality.
Yeah, that would be a succinct way to say it. I mean, we've talked about them before, but it's hard to not come back to HubSpot. You know, because they're not only selling the inbound software, they've done inbound marketing software. They've done a great job of saying, hey, we want to be, you know, our brand. We want our brand to be like a publication. And I met with them about a year ago, and it was cool to see the structure of their team. So to learn about how to scale an inbound marketing department, they have they basically break up into three sprint teams, and one team does short form content like their blog. Another team does long-form content like their ebooks and white papers. And then they have a third team. Each one of these teams is of seven people where they actually are entirely focused on distributing content and optimizing the distribution costs and organic methods of the content distribution. So just from a perspective of how those guys break up their marketing department, there's a lot to be learned there. And they've built they've also successfully, I mean, their software is very expensive. You know, their email list is somewhere in the range of like 100 times the size of their paying customers. Wow. Which you'd have to check. I've kind of heard some offhand on that, but it's a very valuable lesson, because like even the masters of the game, so to speak, have, you know, they know they have to get so many email addresses to get one paying customer. So there's, and they'll nurture you for years. Like, they're fine sending you content and making you a better marketer for 3 years, and then on your third year, when you get the promotion and the new job, you think of them. So they're kind of great in that way, that they're less like, hey, we can really take a step back, and if we make you into a smarter marketer and a better marketer, you know, our brand's gonna win. You know, you have people like me talking about them on a podcast like this. You know, it's kind of they've done a great job. And I saw recently, like, their sales are continuing to rise as a public company, which is good to see that, you know, the value continues to be added. So, I mean, they've coined the term, so to speak, and you can't, it's great to look at how they're doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I for one, I know I've downloaded enough white papers and ebooks from them, and I'm sure every marketer on the planet has at one time or another landed on their blog and signed up for something. So, yeah, that's very good.
When I did, right before we bought them in the past, I remembered, like, they have my customer profile for, like, it was literally 2 years. Wow. And it was like, I was like, I never take those forms too seriously, and there was always... They were like kind of making fun of all the little one-liners I would put in of like biggest marketing challenge. And it was cool because they looked at my customer profile within their own HubSpot account, and it was just like, you know, here are the 15 touch points we've had with David before he even got a demo. And so it's cool to see that customer profile of yourself and of other people.
Yeah, for sure. Great. I think that's the questions I had. Where can people learn more about inbound marketing, and how can they connect with yourself, David?
Well, you can find me on Twitter. It's my name, David Smook. It's like smoke with two O's. You can find me on LinkedIn. On my LinkedIn publisher, my LinkedIn's linkedin.com/ClarkKent, like the Superman character. and there I have, I have a good map that I made, a good mind map of how, content maps to different stages of the funnel, like top of funnel, middle funnel, bottom funnel. So that's a good, image that I made. So I would, if you want to learn more about how I approach it, I would start there. And yeah, that's, pretty much where I'm at with my life.
Great. Well, we'll put all the links in the show notes, and yeah, that's it. Thank you very much for your time, David.
Thank you for having me, Jorgen. It's always good to talk to you.
Catch you soon. Bye now.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of SM Know-How. Please tweet us with your feedback, questions, and comments. And I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that our conference SM London Live is happening on the 11th of November this year. So do block the date in your calendar. We already have speakers from AO, Innocent Drinks, O2, the BBC, and lots more to be confirmed. Check out socialmedialondon.co.uk for more details, and I hope to see you there. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.